You know, when I was going to school, I always had mixed thoughts about take-home exams. I'm not sure if you have the same experience as me, but on one hand, naturally, that is a good thing. You know, in other words, to have the questions, to have all the resources you have available in terms of notes and books and libraries and so on and so forth, to come up with the right answers, it's a good thing to have a take-home exam. But on the other hand, there was also... it wasn't good because your answers had to be more complete, right? In other words, there really wasn't any excuse you had to say, oh, I forgot that, or I didn't study that, or that wasn't available to me. So really, it was a more difficult task I always find. Well, if we know and believe that Jesus knows what he is talking about, that there is a giant test that awaits all of us, a judgment where we will stand before God and give an account of our lives. If we believe that to be true, then really what we find in the book of Matthew 24 at the end and then into 25 is really the take-home final. It is a take-home exam. I mean, basically, Jesus is giving us the answers before the test comes, and that's what we find in terms of what he's asking us to be prepared for. And if by virtue of that, we become the kind of people that live for that day rather than for today. Do you understand the distinction? There's a lot of people that are living for today. The world is pressing us in terms of all the things that we're confronted by in people's opinions or in advertisements or reading magazines or books or whatever it might be. The focus of this world is today. But really the focus of Scripture and the focus certainly of the passages that we're in is for that day. When eventually we will come before our Maker and again give an account of our lives, where the things that we've done and the heart we've done them in will be judged. And so therefore, what we want to do is we want to turn to Matthew 24 and see what Jesus says about that. In other words, if this is right, that this is like the take-home final, like this is the take-home exam, where again, here's the opportunity for you to be prepared and give the right answers, turn to Matthew 24, and we'll continue looking at that. Now, if you remember last week, although when it comes to Matthew 24, I attempted to assign time frames to those statements that Jesus was making. I believe that if Jesus is answering the questions that the apostles ask at the beginning of 24, both when will these events happen, and it was when will the temple be destroyed, what's the sign of your coming, and of the end. And I think there's different things that are said that we did last week, so we won't go over it again, but different things where Jesus seems to be answering one question over another. But in spite of doing that, remember, even though I think there's ways to discern what time frames are being spoken of here, I think the greater principles are more important. First and foremost, we need to be prepared for deception. Three times Jesus mentions it. Be careful when people are saying they're the Christ and they're not. Be careful when they're saying things that are inconsistent with who I am. I believe we need to be ready for persecution. We shouldn't be surprised by it. We shouldn't be overwhelmed by it. We should be able to withstand that with the word in our hearts and with the testimony of our faith in terms of Christ and effectively joining those throughout history that have been persecuted for their faith. Join people who around the world are being persecuted for their faith. You know, we have a pretty comfortable situation here in America. We are not facing the kind of persecution that comes that exists around the world. And maybe we never will. But the Bible never says that because we never will or we couldn't even imagine that we're not prepared for it. Because there may come a time when we're faced with those things. And again, the emphasis of Matthew 24 and these end times passages is be prepared, be ready. I think another thing that we should do in terms of just the general principles is, again, not depend on the success of society or the economy. If things are crumbling around us, well, guess what? Jesus has said, basically, that's what would happen. But ultimately, we look forward to the end. We look forward to that time where Christ will return, and those who are alive at that time will experience what Matthew 24:30b starts off and says. And it says, they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds from one end of the earth to the other. Again, that is what we are looking forward to. That is the day of the Lord. That is the final hope that we were depending on in terms of Christ's return, where again, He makes everything right. All the things that we'd look at in the world and say, oh, this is broken. This is the way it shouldn't be. Well, there's going to be a time where Jesus comes and makes it all right. Now, I'll say a little bit later what time frame I believe that's referring to. But right now, let's just move on in verse 32, starting there. As we start to try and get to this place where we're getting these final exam questions, the take-home, but again, some preparatory work before we get there. And now in verses 32 through 35, it says, "Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away." Now, we know Jesus to be a great teacher. He uses analogy, uses word pictures to kind of explain difficult truths. So we may not know fig trees, we may not understand what he's talking about, but we know daffodils, right? We know crocuses, we know rhododendron and roses, and we say, well, when the daffodils come up, that's a sign of spring, until winter decides to come back and revisit us. But again, there's hope, we know that it's at least near, right? As someone texted me the other day, May is coming. There will be days of 60 degrees, and it will be at least 45 at night, I promise you, when the month of May comes. But again, we know that it's near, and that's what Jesus is saying. For them, fig trees was a common thing, so they would understand, okay, here's a sign that summer is coming. So that's what Jesus is saying. In the same way that you know that, you know it's near. See, he's not saying it's happening. That doesn't mean you see the fig tree, the end is coming, or Jesus' return is coming, but you know that it's right at the door, it's right there. Now, certainly the most challenging verse of the whole passage is verse 34, when it says here, "I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened." Now, naturally, for those who are preterists, again, it's not wrong for us to know fancy theological terms, but those preterists are those who believe that when it comes to Matthew 24, as well as the passages in Revelation, that those are all talking about the first century, particularly before 70 AD, that all that Jesus is preparing the people for is for what's going to happen in terms of the destruction of the temple. But I think for us, the minute that we believe that verse 29 particularly, and then moving on through 32, where this graphic depiction of Christ's return comes and the end is happening, once we recognize that that's a future event, then we have a problem with verse 34. Now, again, it's a problem that's not unresolved. It's a problem we can resolve. Now, one way that people do that is to take that word generation and actually translate that word as race. Okay, basically for me, that would be talking about the Jewish race. In other words, this race, the Jewish people, will not end until the end comes. Now, understand that that is a possible translation, but it's not the best translation. Again, I would not stake my claim or my resolution of the issues that verse 34 creates by changing the translation of that word. But rather, what I would do is approach it like we have all along, seeing that what happened in 70 AD is a prototype for what will happen in the end. In fact, I think it's a prototype for what will happen when any generation of human beings goes through Matthew 24 things. When people are claiming to be Messiah, or it seems to be the end of the world, or there's rumors of wars, or there's famine, or difficulties, or so on and so forth. Every generation can cling to Matthew 24 and say, Jesus has prepared us for this. This is what I'm called to, that I need to persevere. I need to stand firm. And again, Jesus' message now is not only to the first century, but to every century. So basically, when Jesus says, all these things need to happen, I believe there's a way to look at that. In other words, he's not saying the end happens. All these things don't have to include Jesus returning, because again, he's talking about the things that bring you to the door. He's talking about the things that bring, like the end is next. It's right at the door. It's not there. It's not the event. It's the door to the event. And so all these things, or all those things before verse 29 that talks about the persecution of the world, the deception that will be there, the suffering we'll go through, the economic collapse, and rumors of wars, and so on and so forth. So I believe in some ways all those things did happen before 70 AD. I think in terms of being a prototype, in terms of an example, a foreshadowing of the end, if you will, that those things did happen. So I think Jesus is saying this generation is going to experience these things, so be ready for it. See, when I look at what Jesus has to accomplish, again, he doesn't have to answer questions he's asked. He oftentimes didn't answer questions that he was asked. But if he is going to answer the questions he's asked, and he realizes 30 years from now, the temple is going to be destroyed, there's a message of imminence that he has to communicate to the disciples. Like, guys, this is like right in the air. We are like right on top of this. You need to be prepared. You need to be ready. Don't let this shake your faith. Do we realize I still know what I'm talking about? I'm still the Son of God. I'm still your Lord. I'm still the one that should be followed in spite of what happens. So stand firm and be ready. But you know something, what happens when you move on from these verses? Now Jesus starts talking about delay. That what if the Son of Man, and what if the King is delayed in his coming? Or all those you know, the bridesmaids that don't have, five of them don't have their oil ready. What? Why? Because the bridegroom is delayed. And so it's interesting to me that, again, Jesus goes from this message of imminence, it's right at the door, it's right here, it's right near, to wait a minute now, there's an aspect of this being delayed. Well, to be honest with you, I think Jesus, the message of imminence are to his apostles. It's to the people that are present there. The message of delay is to us and every generation beyond the first century that, again, needed to be prepared for the events of the world and the circumstances they faced in life in terms of how does it factor in to Jesus' return. Now, I do believe, as I've said before, I think we are closer now than, well, you can always say that, we're closer than people have ever been, because we're the few. But I think there are dynamics in terms of what we have in the world, you know, with the internet and depravity and all these different things that are happening that make just the rule of the Antichrist and the pattern of thinking in the world, it just seems like we are closer. And, you know, again, we're at that, those false pregnancies, those false contractions. So I think there's a place for us to recognize that it's pretty near. I'm not saying it's next year. Again, Jesus says the day, and I'm not going to go there. I'll say it because this is just my opinion. But again, don't. I'm not prophesying. I just can't imagine this world lasting for another 50 years. I just don't see how we can continue moving along in the digression that we're doing in terms of society and still be around. But again, that's not a prediction. I'm not a fear-mongerer. I'm not trying to do whatever. But just in terms of where we are in relation to, again, the things that Jesus points to in terms of the dynamics and markers that show his coming, again, I think that if we're missing those signs, we're missing something in terms of that. So maybe when Jesus then does speak to us to be ready, there's more of an emphasis for us to actually be ready. So again, just understand that verse 34, I take generation to be generation, but I think that what he's talking about in the imminence of communicating to that generation is be prepared for these things to happen, because in some semblance, in terms of foreshadowing, in terms of prototype, they will be happening to you. I love verse 35, and we can't skip over. We can't just go lightly because it doesn't have to talk about future things. Well, because I think it does. When it says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. I think what Jesus is effectively doing here is he is declaring that his words are equal to the Father's words. He is equating his words to Scripture. And again, that is a heretical thing for a Jewish person to say. For a Jewish man to say that my words, the things I'm speaking, are the same as the Old Testament, are the Scriptures, the prophets, Isaiah, Malachi, and Exodus, and all, my words are the same as that. Because that's what the thoughts of the Jews were about the Old Testament. Those will never go away. God's word is eternal. So Jesus is saying, no, along with those things, my words will never pass away. I think the other thing that he is talking about is when things do destabilize, when you go through a time frame in your life where the earth seems to be passing away and things are falling apart, guess what? My word's consistent. You can still rely on it. If you're looking for a place to turn, that's the place that you want peace, you want confidence, you want comfort. Turn to my word. You'll find it there. And there'll be answers. There'll be direction. There'll be things for you to do. In other words, I've got the answers to the final. You know, you want to see my answers? Here, I'm going to show you my answers. He's got the answers. What could be more important? That you have a final exam, what all of life is bringing us to, and Jesus is going to tell us the very things we should be occupying ourselves with. So, in light of him saying, my words will never pass away, let's go on and look at the words that will never pass away. And so verse 36 says this, no one knows about that day or hour, not even the angel in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. From the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. And so really, I believe that Jesus here is giving us the first lesson that we have for the take-home final. And the first lesson is, don't try to predict the date. Even though I just said, like 50 years, I'm not predicting the date on that. And we're not going to, like, you know, burn candles or have a say, you know, whatever people would do to prepare for the end of the world. Remember when the year 2000 was coming and people stored things in their basement on the Y2K and all? Come on. I mean, those things have happened throughout history. Like I said before, events happen. Oh my gosh, this is going to destroy the world. And again, no one knows the day. No one knows the hour. So don't try to predict it. And you know something? It's both sides. It's not only don't predict that it's happening tomorrow, but also don't predict that it's far off either. See, we can go both ways, right? Yeah, it's going to happen next year, September 22nd, blah, 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 blah. Happens to be my son's birthday, so it can't be that date. No, but, and that's why the date came in my head. But anyway, I'm glad I got the right kid, though, in terms of the birthday. But then there's another tendency we have, right, to say, oh, that's 10 years off. Oh, yeah, that's 50 years. That's not going to happen tomorrow. That's going to... See, there's another way we can predict the date where we're ultimately not really just clinging to Scripture and what it's saying in terms of the dictates of what our lives should be. So again, we don't predict a date in either way, that we have to be ready in the way that Jesus says here. Now, we could go into a conversation about the Trinity here. We'll try to resist, but let me just say that there is a priority in the Trinity. When Jesus says the Father knows and the Son doesn't, you know, there is an aspect in terms of Jesus' life when he's communicating about his Father where he has a secondary role, where he submits to the authority of the Father. It's neat that later on that the Father actually raises him up almost above the Father in terms of his authority because of the sacrifices he's made and the life he's lived here on earth. But we won't go there either, even though I just did. But there's a submission that Jesus has towards the Father. Another thing that happens in terms of Jesus' communication about himself is the fact that he empties himself of his divine capacity. In other words, that it's called the kenosis of Christ, where he does not reveal himself in glory. He doesn't rely on his divine power to exist here on this earth. So either one or both of those are happening here. When Jesus says the Son doesn't know it, is it the Son of Man? It's the human Jesus that doesn't know it, and I'm emptying myself of that? Or am I just expressing to you that as the Son, in the context of the second person of the Trinity, there's an aspect that I'm still underneath the Father? So again, that's all I'll do in terms of that, because again, I don't think that's the focus of the passage, because I think the second lesson for the take-home final is don't let the regularity of life blind you to how suddenly it can change. Don't let the regularity of life blind you to how suddenly it can change. Don't let the regularity of life blind you to higher priorities and greater satisfaction. Let me read that again, too. Don't let the regularity of life blind you to higher priorities and greater satisfaction. And third, don't let the regularity of life make you think that there's plenty of time. You know, there's a little story about Satan dealing with three demons and what their plans are for deception. And one demon comes to Satan and says, "You know something? I'll go out and I'll tell people there is no God." And Satan says, "You know something? It's really hard to convince people that there's no God because the evidence of God is all around them." So the second demon raises his hand and says, "You know something? I'll go out and I'll tell them there's no hell." Well, you know something? Inside the heart of man, they know there's kind of consequences for their behavior, that at some point in time, the jig is going to be up. So I don't think that's going to work either. And the third demon raised his hand and said, "I'll go tell them that there's no hurry." He says, "Yeah, that's the key. That's the thing that will deceive people, that there's no hurry. You have another chance. You can get this right 30 years from now. Maybe you are the 20-somethings, the 30-somethings. You know, when I'm old, I'll follow Jesus. When I can't have any more fun." Now, ultimately, if that's your philosophy, a lot of you are at that place, so get going. Yeah, you know, like if you said to you when you were 20, "Hey, when I'm 40, I'll really live for Jesus." Well, okay, here it is. You're 40, so let's get moving. Let's start serving Jesus the way you said you were when you were 20. But you kind of get the point that there's an aspect of our... See, there's an aspect of the regularity of life to assume that today is going to be like yesterday. And tomorrow is going to be like today. Because in our experience, that's the way it always has been. But Jesus says, in terms of his coming, you don't know how suddenly that can change. I mean, when he uses the analogy of a thief, I mean, it really is brilliant. It might confuse us on one end, but I'll explain that a little bit. But, I mean, ultimately, a thief does not come to your house. You don't find a note on your door. On Tuesday, I'm going to rob your house. You know, in fact, his surprise, that is his greatest weapon in terms of him, you not knowing when he's coming. And so in the same way, Jesus is going to be coming, but it's not going to be for the same reason. He's going to come in the same way in terms of you not expecting it, but certainly for a different reason. Whereas the thief is bad news in his coming, Jesus coming for us as believers is good news. But again, he's pointing to how suddenly it can be. And look at the picture he gives. You know, two people working in the field and boom, one's gone. One's, you know, this is like you're around the dinner table at night and then all of a sudden, boom, someone's not there anymore. Like you hope, well, actually, not sure. I'll explain this too in a little bit. Whether you want the one to be stay or whether you want to be the one that goes. But that's how suddenly the end is going to come. That's how suddenly his return is going to be. And so when Jesus now from here is going to be talking about be prepared, be ready, be vigilant, be alert in terms of what kind of life you're living. What is Jesus going to find you doing when he returns? Just realize how suddenly that can happen. That could happen tomorrow. That could happen next week. Again, that is the imminent nature. Again, there'll be this message of delay, but in the context of that delay is this suddenness where radically things will change. See, at some point in time, all the things that we... You know, some here again. I'm going ahead of my notes. Okay, I did that. Okay, yeah. So let me just talk about the time. Okay, so in the context of this delay, there's an imminence, there's a suddenness of what Jesus comes, and in terms of him taking people, him again, one being left, one being taken. Now, ultimately, when we look at just what Scripture communicates about Jesus returning. Jesus coming to the earth to intervene. There's two events that describes. One is the rapture of the church, and the other is him establishing the millennial reign here on earth. Okay? That ultimately, if you look at the end of the millennial reign, Jesus is on the earth. Satan is coming against the city where Jesus is, and Jesus just decimates him and then establishes a new Jerusalem here on the earth. So again, it can't even be describing here what Jesus is talking about, coming on the clouds and the trumpet sounding, in terms of his return being about the end of the world. But really, remember, the disciples asked about the end of the age. So I think what this is describing is when Jesus comes in and establishes his millennial reign, that the picture in Revelation is that things continue to decline, things continue to deteriorate, the persecution of the church is heightened, Antichrist is controlling the world, the false prophet is testifying to what the Antichrist is, Satan is empowering and invigorating all of that, and then Jesus comes in on the white horse and establishes his kingdom here on this earth. And so I believe when Matthew 24 is talking about Jesus, in verse 30, that second part of 30, in terms of Jesus coming on the clouds, that's what Jesus' reference point is. Because I think for Jesus, that is the end of that age. That the millennium will be a different age. It'll be a different period of human history where I believe Jesus will establish a kingdom on this earth and government, society will be perfect. You know, I do believe, if I can just take an aside for a moment, that I think every epoch of history, every age, every dispensation, if you will, of history is intended by God to teach us a lesson. And how many people in the world today say, if the government were only different, if society were only different, if politicians got it right, well, therefore, I would be obedient and I would believe. Or I would understand the plan of God, but the world is so corrupted, I just can't, you know, bear the temptation that's there, or whatever excuses they might come up with. Well, just imagine 1,000 years of history where the government is pure, where Jesus establishes righteousness. You turn on the TV and it's righteous things happening. It's godly things that are communicated by people. And then in the midst of that, Satan is released after 1,000 years and is able to get enough people that outnumber the sands of the seashore opposed to Jesus. So in other words, you can't blame government. But I think the millennial reign is that time frame. And so therefore, when Jesus is talking about, again, now I'm coming and someone's being taken and someone is being left, there could be a reason why being left is the good thing. That you being left is you're being left to enter the millennial reign, to be one of the people that are part of that 1,000 years going from the earth this age to another age. Or it could be the fact that those that are taken are that very thing, and that it would be taken to Jesus, but still to exist in the context of the millennial reign. So again, it's hard to identify just what is better in terms of whether you're taken or whether you're left. But again, that is not the important issue. The important issue is the suddenness of it. The important issue is it could happen at any moment. And so therefore, what does Jesus end with? Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. Keep watch, be vigilant, be intentional, be alert, be ready. As he says in verse 44, so you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come in an hour when you do not expect him. So again, from here, again, we just continue to operate in terms of these lessons, these points that Jesus would raise in terms of how do we be ready? You know, what are the answers on the final? What is Jesus giving us in terms of a take home? I think the third lesson is, again, like you said, we need to keep watch. We need to be vigilant. We need to be prepared. We need to be alert. We need to be ready. And basically what Jesus is going to answer in the rest of 24 and then all of 25 is just how we should be ready. But, you know, I think in addition to what Jesus would talk about, I think we could come up with some pretty good answers ourselves. Like when you think about Jesus returning, like for the first time you seeing him physically, what do you think you'd want in your heart? What do you think you'd want to say, Jesus? This is what I've expended my life on. Because you know something? There's going to come a point in time where none of this matters. What you possess, what education you have, what you look like, what family you were born into. Again, what is consistent in terms of the regularity of life, again, is going to go away. The things that we even unwittingly start connecting to. See, it's okay in terms of our lives if we look forward to vacation. You know, we look forward to graduating from college, or we're working and we're trying to get a promotion, or we're trying to get more income, or we're raising our kids, and all those things in terms of the regularity of life are fine in God's economy as long as they're not limited to that. As long as in the midst of that, we're not focused on eternal priorities. That we're not focused on, again, heavenly things. See, I believe that when it comes to the regularity of life, either we can succumb to that and be wooed by that and become lazy because of that, be spiritually dull because of the regularity of life, or we can see that the regularity of life is the very place God intends to glorify Himself. It's the very place that God seeks to use us. You talk about living out the Christian life. You talk about testifying for Jesus. You talk about having the joy and the peace that God would intend for us. Well, when you can have that in the regularity of life, when you can deal with people in this world and still be pure, still be loving, still be kind, still be merciful, you glorify God. You manifest God's presence. And so therefore, Jesus isn't opposed to the regularity of life, but he's recognizing here that there's an aspect of that lulling us so we're not prepared for the suddenness of it. But so that's why he says we need to keep watch, we need to be diligent. But again, when we think about how we would be ready, again, what things would we occupy and see, there are gonna be aspects of us living the regularity of life. Like in other words, if Jesus comes back and you're trying to raise your kids, oh my gosh, I'm not preaching in Swahili, or I'm not like a missionary in Africa, so God must be dissatisfied with me because I'm trying to raise my kids. Or I'm cooking dinner at home and I'm trying to make it tasty for my wife or husband or whoever might be cooking in your home. And Jesus comes back and you're doing that. But what's in your heart when you're doing that? Are you glad? Are you letting whatsoever your hand finds to do glorify God? See, what is the heartbeat of your life? Are you living for yourself? Are you living for others? Are you living for yourself? Are you living for God? Again, are you focused on eternal purposes or purposes of this earth? Are you seeking to be gratified by earthly things? Is the only thing you understand that, boy, ice cream really tastes good? And I like the stimulus I get from this. And all the gratification we get is from physical things. Well, ultimately, that's a bad sign. Because you will be lulled by the regularity of life as the only satisfaction you understand is physical satisfaction. Jesus would point us to spiritual satisfaction. Satisfaction that comes from the Word, from the Spirit, from worship, from interaction with Him. So again, when we think about what we would be to be ready for Jesus to return, to me, it's about having a godly character, a godly heart, where I'm considering His purposes, I'm being gratified by the things He would have me be gratified by, and I'm doing the service and the work that God would call me to, edifying believers and proclaiming the gospel to unbelievers. See, again, we could come up with a pretty good list, couldn't we, in terms of what it would be to be ready. Well, as we continue on, into chapter 24, and we'll have to do this next week because we have to prepare ourselves for communion, that Jesus is going to give us the answer. In other words, we can come up with various things we could think of in terms of what it would mean to be ready, but Jesus is going to give us the answers to that. And again, that's the benefit of this passage. Again, some more answers to that take-home final. But you know, I think ultimately, when I thought about this message, when I thought about how important it is for us to focus in the context of communion on the second coming of Christ. You know, there's more than an appropriateness to that. You know, to recognize in His first coming that the primary thing we celebrate in communion is his death, is his resurrection, is the sacrifice that he made. But again, in his second coming, to recognize that again, it is going to be the fulfillment of all of that. It is going to be the very thing that Jesus came to accomplish in terms of making things right, bringing redemption, bringing help, bringing comfort. That will all be consummated in the second coming. And so I think it would be wise for us in terms of our, well, what I would always want there to be in terms of our communion is a time of reflection, a time of examination, where we think about, again, what track are we heading down? What things are we pursuing? What things are important to us? And is it in the line of being ready for Christ? Or is it about me and my endeavors and what I desire? Because when we think about all that glory will mean, even though I think, you know, when Jesus is talking about here, he's talking about the millennial reign, the ultimate end for us is paradise. The ultimate end for us is being in God's presence in heaven.